So the notion of being queer, that was not a thing. I didn't have any kind of representation growing up. So I didn't know it was a thing. It's not like being gay was even shown to me. It wasn't an option.
Hello, hello, and welcome to today's episode of the Coming Out Late podcast. I am Robin, your host, and I want to thank you for tuning in today and for spending a sliver of your time with me listening to Coming Out Late. You are just listening to the voice of today's guest, Monique. I first met Monique when she began coming to my weekly Wednesday afternoon support group called the Not Straight Support Group. Week after week, Monique would share with us the challenges that she was facing that comes with coming out late in life as a cis woman in a lifelong marriage to a cis man. And I mean lifelong. But likewise, every so often, Monique would also share with us breakthroughs that she had had both individually and together with her husband. She shared books and podcasts she listened to and new insights that she gained about herself and her relationship with her husband as a result of all the hard work she's been doing. Monique's growth and dedication to her own personal understanding and acceptance of this new and shocking revelation about her own sexual identity has been nothing short of remarkable to watch and be witness to. And that is why I had to ask Monique to be my guest on the podcast so that we, could share her remarkable journey and the twists and turns of her coming out story thus far with all of you. And I do mean thus far, because Monique's story is far from over. But before we introduce you to Monique and her fascinating journey, I'm going to let Ms. Jaslyn Edgar take us in with her song, Shine. And I will see you on the other side. Take it away, Jaslyn.
You've been hiding in the shadows way too long. You always thought that you were weak, but babe, you're wrong. Yeah, you better step into the light, just give it a try. Think that it's time you let that spark out. You've been hiding in the shadows way too long.
Hey, welcome to the Coming Out Late podcast. I'm Robin, your host, and I'm a late bloomer just like you. We are a part of a rapidly growing, lesser known or even talked about subset of the queer community. We're a tribe, if you will. And if you're anything like me, when I came out, I was confused, scared. I felt like I was going crazy, and I felt all alone and had nobody to talk to. Not to worry, you've come to the right place. In the Coming Out Late podcast, you'll hear real, raw, and relatable coming out late stories. You'll be inspired, informed, and educated, and you'll definitely feel supported. And you can stop feeling like you're living someone else's life and start living your own. So welcome. You have found your tribe. And welcome to the Coming Out Late podcast. As per usual, I will hold off and make all the announcements at the end of the podcast. I also need to remind you that you are listening to adults having adult conversations, so you may hear us talk about sex, sexual desire, intimacy, and you may even hear a cuss word or two. So without further ado, let's roll the audio of my interview with Monique talking with us about her coming out late journey. So I am just like so stoked to be here today because, you know, I have a guest who I know through my support group, and I want to introduce you to her. Her story is incredible. And I just think it was something that's really, really important that we need to share with the rest of you that are listening, because I think you are going to be not only moved by her story, but also learn a thing or two and maybe even have questions. So I want to introduce to you my guest this week, Monique. And I'm going to ask Monique to introduce herself a little bit, maybe her age. Is she married or not married? You know, just whatever she feels comfortable sharing with us about where has she come from and where is she today and where does she foresee herself going. So welcome, welcome, Monique, to the podcast. And I'm just so excited to have you on.
Well, that is quite the intro. I am very honored to be here, first of all, because I think that what you do, Robin, is so important for the coming out late community as a whole, because we are really, I think that you kind of say it quite rightly, that we are a very particular niche of the queer community, and we have such a different experience that really should be honored and known more, because we have our own battles that we have to face, and as well as just its own beautiful journey, that it having lived a life as one thing and then come out midlife as something else.
Thank you. Thank you for those kind words. I really appreciate it. What has the journey been like for you? Who was Monique as a little girl? What kind of upbringing did you have? Did you grow up with a mom and dad? Do you have siblings? All that good stuff. And how old are you today?
So I am 47. I'm 47 years old. And I'm the youngest of three. I have an older brother and an older sister. I was the oops baby. So there is a lot of time between them and me. So as far as my childhood goes, I was an only child for the high school years in my house where I was raised. I was raised in a very affluent community. I don't think that I really appreciated how affluent it was until I left that community. But it's one of those places that it's actually known outside of the state for being kind of richy rich. But in my family, my friends had the swimming pools and tennis courts in their backyards, you know, with tanning beds in their house, or the library, you know, with the little ladders that kind of go. And that was commonplace. That's how they were. In my family, we didn't have quite as much. We didn't have a swimming pool or a tennis court in our backyard, but we were still really well off. I wouldn't say we were in high society, but we were definitely upper middle class. But the point of when you are in a community that has the super mega wealthy rich is that you live in a fishbowl. So everything matters. Etiquette matters. How you were raised matters. What you wear matters. Everything. Everyone is watching everything. You know, I know things like, oh, it's one end of a thumb's length between the placemat and where the plate starts. You know, these are the type of etiquette things that I was raised with. And when you are in that type of fishbowl, it's things like you don't wear white after Labor Day. And that's not just like a funny little thing. That's law. And I was the good girl. I had my path, you know, as laid out as all the proper, if you were a proper child, you had a very specific path that you followed to be a proper citizen of this community. And what being raised in that world is like is very anxiety setting, because if you break the rules or you don't follow the rules, you become an outcast very, very quickly. And when you're an outcast, it's quite scary, because then your family doesn't get positions at the yacht club. I know that sounds horrible, but it's the truth. Your family doesn't get positions. Your family, you don't get jobs. You know, just even I worked at a tennis house and I got that job because of who I knew. And so it was, those were the things you stuck to the mold so that you could progress in society. So here's this very click, you know, everything was a click. Everything was, you stayed with your people and it was very much that. And like I said, very anxiety setting. But in any case, what I would say is that having brought up in that society, the notion of being queer, that was not a thing. I mean, I didn't have any kind of representation growing up. So I didn't know it was a thing. It's not like being gay was even shown to me. It wasn't an option. It was not done to be out or to be queer. And so I didn't know that world. I had zero, any kind of representation, queer representation was not there. And there was one girl in my high school that was out, so to speak. And
But she was very loud and she was political and she was an extrovert. And I was not. I was the introvert. I was someone who did not want to rock the boat. And she had, you know, a cool style. And it was just so much the antithesis to what I was that it never even occurred to me, never even occurred to me. And of course, I had, as I'm finding out, all the kind of stereotypical things as a little blooming lesbian would. You know, I was enraptured by Chitara in Thundercats. I wanted Buffy and Willow to kiss so bad. And I was so happy when Willow came out. And, you know, I'm watching Xena Warrior Princess and I'm like, come on, just kiss, get real, you know, just please. And yeah, but that didn't clue me in. I had no idea. I was the loner kid who was very anxious and always trying to people please my way, because that's how you got further. So when a boy from the inner city, not my city, moved to town, it was a very big deal. And I should fast forward. I date boys, and David is my husband currently. And so when I met David, we meet at age 16. And it was kind of hilarious because here was, so I'll just set the picture. I'm at my locker. I'm sitting down with my group of friends. So this group of friends is like a wall of people. And I'm sitting at my locker next to my boyfriend at the time. And here comes this nice, which is also different, this nice kid who comes up. We had a mutual friend, and he actually got my friend to formally introduce us. And so Sarah said, Ronnie, this is David. And he comes in the middle and literally kind of squishes his way in through into the clique and is like, hi, I'm David. I just noticed you're in my astronomy class and you're in my English class and my history class. And it was so obvious that he was trying and it was authentic and it was not, and it wasn't this, it was just not done. It was just so honest and real and brave. Oh my God, it was so brave that here this kid comes in and just disrupts the system. He disrupted the system. And so I was really just taken aback because that was just not done. And he was crazy mature. And he has two younger siblings. So he is the oldest in his family. He has two younger siblings. And he watched his siblings a lot, and so much so that he didn't call them brother and sister. He called them the kids. So he had to watch the kids. He had to take care of the kids. And he already had a job. He was mature to my vastly immature. And what was interesting is that here was someone that wanted to pay attention to me, like uniquely to me. And I had never had that before, even with other boyfriends at that age. They just sort of like come into your life and you're just like, oh, okay, I guess I'm dating now. Like, it wasn't really a thing. And this was so purposeful and so immediate. And I was just drawn to him. And what was amazing is that he was drawn to me as well. And so after 2 weeks, he actually proposed to me when we were 16, but we were like, we were seriously like on his bunk bed. Yeah. Like it was not Lily thing. So we weren't actually proposed, like we weren't engaged, but we considered it such because we just knew it was so like obvious that I'm like, yeah, I'm going to grow up with this man. Like I just knew it. And it's funny because someone else talked about, I read somewhere where someone was saying that they were called to marriage. And I really think that I was called to marriage because it was such a, I can't think of any word but obvious. It was just so obvious that he was my person. Wow. That there was no fear. Like, it wasn't even a question.
Yeah.
And so it was strange because here we have this blooming, and we got along just so well and so effortlessly and had this wonderful relationship. And then we had a friend come in who kind of was a little bit meddlesome, and he actually broke us up for a couple of days. It was really strange, and both David and I kind of even don't even know what happened. I don't think we even said that we were going to break up. It was just like, okay, is that it? Then we're done? Okay, I guess we're done, because, you know, it's high school and that's what happens sometimes. And so for 3 days, I was without him. And then I went and I got him back. But it was, at that time, we're like, oh, okay, well, maybe we should kind of see other people. Like, maybe this is not. And so we're trying to just be open. Then when I went to college, I was still, what was weird to me is that, and this must have been more the lesbian side, actually, now hindsight, looking back, I knew something was off, but I didn't know what, because he was my best friend. But I knew that a connection was missing. Like, there was something that I couldn't put my finger on that was missing, and I didn't know what it was. And what was interesting now, looking back at it, is that there was, you know, all my sexual exploration as a little girl, like, we're talking in like third grade, fifth grade, you know, when you just kind of messed around with your girlfriends, and I would get all like hot and bothered with my girlfriend. And, you know, play kiss, where you're putting your hand over your mouth and like kissing each other and rubbing each other inappropriately. And I think the term would be heavy petting and all that. And I'd get so wound up in bodily desire, not knowing. So now I'm in college, not knowing that that is what I was missing because of that comp-het conditioning. I didn't know what body desire was anymore. I just knew how to be desired. In the words of Glennon Doyle, you know, I knew how to be desired. I didn't know desire. Wow. So I was like, okay, well, I got to do a test. I'm in college now. I have to figure this out one way or the other. I went to college as for microbiology. I've always been into like, let's experiment. Let's prove the hypothesis. And so I pick up a guy. I wait, we're all watching a movie. It was like a movie night in the dorm, and everyone clears out, and I just kind of hang around because the guy who owned the VCR was really, you know, aesthetically good looking. He was a swimmer, so he was just like, you know, really toned and built and just had that ultimate masculine body and form. And so I'm like, hey, and he's like, hey. And so we go up to his dorm room and I start messing around with him because in my head, if I can actually mess around with this person, then something's wrong with David and I. You know, like if this goes through, because here is a person who is all like the super fit. And in my family, being healthy and physically fit was like the epitome of desire type of thing, I would say. And I start kissing him and I'm like, yeah, there's nothing here. So I get out of that situation so fast. I make up like big lies, some big lies that just, I'm like, oh, I can't do this now. And I get out of his dorm and the guy was actually very nice. And he covers for me with his friends like, oh, you know, I leave out his dorm and his friends are like, oh, what happened? And the guy just said, yeah, I wish nothing happened. And so he covered for me, which I really appreciated. And so now I'm like, well, cool. I obviously couldn't do that. Dave and I are on. Like, it is, we're golden. And so time passes by and we want to get engaged. And David keeps buying me lovely rings. And I keep telling him to return the rings because he can't afford the rings. And so I go to Walmart and I pick up 2 gold bands and he comes out for the weekend and I propose to him.
Wow.
And we get engaged, and me proposing to him was weird and strange and no one, and that was entirely off cue back in 1995.
Nobody did that. Let me back up a second. I have a question. When you were in college, did it ever occur to you to experiment with women?
No, not once.
Wow. Okay.
The only gay people that I knew were male gay people, not any lesbians. And even though, and I would say that they weren't even, they were more like acquaintances. They weren't even my friends. So I didn't have any gay friends. And it didn't even occur to me. And it's interesting because when we then got married in 2000 and started our lives together, it just didn't occur to me. I didn't even know. So then the hilarious part is, so how did I find out? I was at, it was like 2016, and I went to go see Bad Moms with my sister. And there's a part in Bad Moms where the women just kind of get kind of tipsy and drunk, and they just start kissing each other, and it's just this kind of like fest. And I'm enjoying the movie. And she recoils. My sister was just like, oh, you know, like recoils. And I was like, whoa, straight people exist. I didn't know before that point that real straight women actually existed. I thought all women were attracted to women because it's the trope, you know, like, oh, if you get a girl a little tipsy, you know, things happen. And so I just really thought that that was the case for everybody. And that really got me thinking, like, oh my gosh, I don't think I'm not straight. Then that's what that means. And so I came out to David at the kitchen table in our old house. I'm like, honey, I think I'm bi. To which he pulled up a chair. He's like, ooh, let's discuss this. You know, It's very exciting because it's just one of those things. It's just, it's exciting.
Yeah, it's let me just back up a second too. Like what I find, I'm the opposite of what you were thinking in that I never looked at a woman, like I didn't admire women or look at them and thought, oh, well, all women are attracted to women. Like that was never my thought. And I actually think to some degree, because I, like your sister, would recoil. Like I would have recoiled in that movie theater. And there is a rumor or whatever, I don't know what you would call it, that, you know, that out there that says, well, a lot of times people that are think that they're hetero and they are like, no, 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 I don't want to be anywhere near a gay person. They think there's a good chance that you're doing that because somewhere inside of you that thinks or knows that you are gay and you are rejecting that part of you. So I don't know. I wonder if your sister's gay. No, I didn't have that kind of response, but I definitely felt, ew, you know, I mean, with two guys or two girls together, and I was afraid to go to college because people told me don't play sports in college. Well, I was not afraid to go to college. I was afraid to play sports in college because everybody said, well, all the female athletes are all lesbians. And you know, I thought, oh my God, if I drink the water, I'm going to be one of them too. I was petrified. And little did I know that, you know, I was hiding, you know, burying something deep down inside. So, but I think it, more often than not, women are like, I thought all women had found other women attractive. I think that's more the norm.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I was, the other side of my story is that I dropped out of being a science major and became an art major because that's what I was always good at. And I was always a creative mind. And so I grew up at the art museum. You know, my mom would just drop me off at the art museum and I would have classes with the adults and that's what I would do. And so I was used to seeing the naked woman form all over the place, you know, and in college it was the same thing because we would have a figure drawing class where, you know, a nude model would come in and we would draw the nude model. And so I always just enjoyed the class immensely.
Oh my gosh, that is wild. So, all right. So you come out to your husband, David, at the kitchen table. I think I'm by. Yes. And he's intrigued, pulls up a chair. Yeah. Is like, let's talk. What then? What happened then?
Well, I guess what type of visual stimulation for us changed at that point. And so we're like, ooh, let's kind of change up the things. Because at this point in our marriage, David was always the one who had the libido, and I was always the one who didn't. And it was, I always thought, oh, it's because of my design career is very demanding. I'm always on deadline. I'm, you know, in the middle of the night with press checks, and mm-hmm. it's just, and then when we had my kids, you know, my first was born in 2004. My second was born in 2009.
Wow.
And as soon as you're a mom, the trope is it's gone, you know? And so it's like, yeah, it's just gone because I am climbing the corporate ladder, so to speak. And I'm a mom and I'm getting older. So it was just waning and waning. And so by the time this news of I'm bi comes out, it was actually kind of considered like, oh, maybe something's going to spark for us, you know, something.
Yeah.
And it did for a while, you know, because we're starting to give me a little bit more of what my body is naturally hardwired for, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, oh, okay. Yeah. Got a little boost, a little bi boost. Well, time goes on and I start going more in depth into my queer side. And start listening to different YouTube videos and following bloggers. And
was that Elena intentional? Were you intentionally? Yeah.
Yeah. It was more like it still felt a little taboo. Like it would be, oh, I'm gonna go and just watch this here. And I was very scared at that time to have David know that I was looking into that side of me. I always would kind of watch those on the sly, and I felt bad. Like I felt like I was betraying him by honoring that side of me more. And that just grew and it grew and it grew. And then we went to Disney World with some friends of mine, and it was a family trip. Both of our families went, and I said to my girlfriend, I go, I'm in real trouble. I think I'm gay. I don't know what to do. I think I'm gay. And I'm putting all the pieces together. I go, that means that I have to divorce my husband, my rock. Like David is my everything, you know, and he's my world. And he's the only thing that's been in my world that was so solid, just absolutely there. Every single time, perfectly solid and stable. And it's the one thing that I'm like, oh no, that's what this means. Because if you look up gay woman, straight man, the news is not good on Google. Let me just tell you, the news is not good. It's like you have these stats, 93% of mixed orientation marriages don't last for 3 years after the person comes out. Great. Okay. And it was, what does this mean? And my friend who was just trying to have a vacation was like, well, have you even been with a woman? I'm like, no, because I had not since I was a little girl. But she's like, well, how do you know then? Like, how do you know? And I'm like, I just know. I don't know how I know. I really think so. But well, I don't know.
That's such a common response to, you know, to hetero people, that when you say, well, how do you know for sure? You know, I mean, I was never with a woman either. And when I finally, I mean, it was freaking 10 years in the making before I had my aha moment. But when I finally did have my aha moment, I just knew. Like, I just knew. It's the weirdest thing. And it's hard to explain that to people, you know, that you don't have to necessarily have any physical contact or anything with a woman, you know, or whoever, same sex. It's tough. So then what and I also want to point out too, that it is very common that the first thought is, well, I have to divorce my husband. Like, this isn't going to work out. Like, you know, back, I mean, I've been out 8 years now, And 8 years ago, that kind of was the only choice. You know, that mm-hmm. there weren't a lot of other choices out there, or at least none, just like sexuality was not really obvious for us during our childhood and upbringing and whatnot. But, you know, neither were our choices and options. I mean, it just seemed like very, very binary, just like yes. everything else, you know,
yes.
married, not married, you know, gay, you can't be married to your husband. So, yeah. So where did you go from there? From Disney?
Well, what was weird is that at that time, my career was also exploding a bit. And the pandemic happened in 2020. So like, it was December 2019, I come out, 2020, like the pandemic's right around the corner. And so we're dealing with a pandemic. Because I own my own business, it died. It just died in the pandemic. And so at that time, I started getting certified as different things. I got my RYT 200. I got a breath coach certification first, and I started trying to heal myself. So I did MBSR, mindfulness-based stress reduction. They have an 8-week class, which is fabulous. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm just going to heal myself. I'm going to start.
From the gay or?
From the stress and the anxiety of changing careers. So mm-hmm. because I come out in 2019, the pandemic hits. I also, because all this is going on and I'm losing my career of 24 years and like, what do I do? And at that time, I enroll in Sadhguru's inner engineering for spiritual reasons. And so I do his inner engineering course, which I really can't recommend enough. Like it was pivotal for me. And so in 2021, like I kind of, because all of that other stuff was going on, the queer side just sort of like got buried. It just got buried. We had too much other stuff. And mm-hmm. so when I came home directly from Disney World, and what I told my girlfriend at the time was, I'm like, I'm just going to talk to David about it. I'm just going to talk because we always figure stuff out. And so I came home and I just told him, I go, honey, I think I'm gay. And at that time, we had also just moved into a brand new house, brand new house. So it was just so much. And his response, what was weird is I don't really remember. I remember telling him, but I don't remember after that. Like it gets really fuzzy in my mind of what his response was, because I think I was just so terrified and in a fear state.
What were you terrified of? What were some of the things you were afraid of?
I have had a lot of self-worth issues that I've been working through from childhood. And so I just thought, well, this is it. I'm finally giving him a reason. I'm finally giving him a reason to go, because I put this man through his paces, you know, through many different things. And I thought, yeah, this is going to be the straw, because obviously my libido's not waning. Well, actually, I didn't know that. I was not at that time. I just thought, okay, here's a problem. We've got a problem, and it's a real problem. And it's the first problem that we've ever had in our marriage. We've never had any problems besides having children. I mean, children tend to be a big problem on their own. But
and this is a big issue. I mean, you know, this is huge, and it could very well be quote unquote a problem. You know, like one would assume immediately that this is a problem,
right?
You know, and how the hell, you know, are we going to approach this?
Right. And so I wasn't sure, but with everything else that was going on. And that I just, he asked me, he very graciously, I do remember, is that he was like, if it's in your best interest, not his, he never said his, and he was never, the man's just unflappable. Like he's steady. And so he's like, if it's what will make you happy, I'll let you go,
and
I will wish you well. And I was like, no, that won't make me happy. No. Don't leave me. That won't make me happy. Please just stay. And he's like, no, like, he's like, whatever you need, I am here. And he,
wow. Yeah,
he never blamed me. He never questioned me on it. There was zero question.
Wow. Well, yeah. This may be a really good time to surprise the listeners, because for the first time in the history of this podcast, we have the man who she has been talking about, David, who I want to say I'm blown away by the individual, the human being that you are. And for those of you who cannot see him, he is a damn good looking man, too.
Good. No, I'm turning another shade of red. Thank you.
Yes, he is. He's turning another. So for the first time in the history of this podcast, we actually have a husband and wife on to talk about this journey. And I'm telling you, I'm getting goosebumps now just even thinking about the beauty in this couple to agree to come on and talk about what this journey's been like for them. And so anyway, without further ado, I want to introduce to you Monique's other half, and she would probably tell me it's her better half.
For sure.
David, welcome to the podcast, David. Oh my God.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure being on for sure. We've had the opportunity to listen to an episode or two, and it's amazing how much we've recognized in the stories of other people.
Yeah, it's so true. And that's really why, you know, why I bring people on is to share our stories, because people need to know they're not alone, that they're feeling these feelings as well, that their marriages don't have to end, that they're, you know, that spouses can be involved in this formula, you know, and they just as much as they are a part of the all the positive things, they can also be a part of the solution when the shit hits the fan, and you don't have to throw out the baby with the bathwater. That's for damn sure. And so I'd like to give you an opportunity, David, to talk a little bit about what your upbringing was like. We know a little bit that you're the oldest of three. You know, did you grow up in a conservative town? Did you have much exposure to the gay community? And bring us up to where, you know, bring us back up to where Monique sat down and said, I think I'm gay.
Yeah. So I grew up more in the outskirts of the city. My dad was a police officer. My mom, you know, she was taking care of us kids, and she actually ran a babysitting service within our household in order to help make ends meet. And so, like Monique alluded to earlier, you know, a little bit opposite end, you know, of the income spectrum. And so kind of came from that upbringing. Like you said, two siblings, both younger. I think back then, like, I didn't really have a good sense of whether or not I was in a liberal or conservative community. I would say it was probably more conservative, just, you know, based on where we were at and religious upbringing and that sort of stuff. And I would say zero exposure to the gay community at all. I actually remember I'm literally just now remembering that went on a trip to New York City with a friend's family. Just I was tagging along, and we visited somebody that they knew that, you know, like, it was a guy and his roommate was a guy, and it was like, what's going on? You know, like, but it still didn't even click, you know, because, like, I don't know. Yep. Like, it's just, it's.
Why would it? Like, we're not right? exposed to it. So why would it click?
Totally a lack of exposure thing for sure. So, yeah, no, nothing like that growing up for sure. And I think it was only more into college, and not even my college, her college, where I even became aware of the fact that gay people existed, honestly. Yep. So,
isn't that crazy? And where
really
did
is.
You, all right, I got to find out, where did you get the courage to, like, introduce yourself back in high school when she's standing next to her freaking boyfriend amongst a clique?
I'm not even sure that I realized that it was her boyfriend that was going on at the time. I just know that there was just this gorgeous woman that was in three of my classes it sounds so embarrassing now, like, that I, like, literally listed all of the classes that we were in together. But I mean, honestly, like, I was just awestruck by her from the moment I saw her, and that was that. And I'll tell you the geeky rest of the story is that from sitting down at that locker, we walked to first hour, which was astronomy class. And the way that I got her phone number was showing her I had this calculator watch that could store phone numbers on it. And I was like, asked her for her phone number. She gave it to me, and I'm pretty sure I called her that very night.
Oh, my gosh. That is awesome. You got to teach me how to find that courage. That is so cool.
You know what? And actually, I think might have been part of it, too, was like, I don't know, maybe a little bit of repression or whatever, because up until, I guess, a little bit more of the backstory, that what actually brought us together, like, we lived in the city and my parents didn't want us going to the public schools. So we went to parochial school. And so by then I was in an all boys high school. And then this is the serendipitous part that isn't a great, you know, like a, not a totally happy thing. My dad, you know, got into an accident while he was on the force, and it led to his retirement. And so it was through that process that we ended up being at the same high school for literally one semester.
Wow.
And then we moved again and moved out and stayed together. And so, yeah, so that's that accident that my dad had at the force is actually what brought us together.
Wow. So. I'm getting goosebumps again. Wow. There are no accidents, you know? Well, I mean, there's those kind of accidents, but there's no. Yeah.
Wow. Right, for sure. So I don't know if the courage came from the fact that, like, I was just like, I was so ready to be like, I've just never been into sports and typical guy stuff. I always like related better with women in general. You know, this wasn't about like dating. This was just about relating with a person, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think that like some of it was just like finally getting out of that environment and being around people that I could talk to. But yeah, I think that's all kind of put into it. Thanks.
That's cool. So what do you recall? Like, let's go back to when she first said that she was bi. What were, you know, you pulled up a chair and said, oh, cool, let's talk. Like, what was going through your mind, and how did you see, if at all, that it would impact your relationship, your marriage?
This is where I'm going to struggle with my memory of things for a bit. However, I've always been in one career or another where troubleshooting is part of the job. And so this felt like a problem to be troubleshot, honestly. and even before it, you know, like this misalignment in our libido always felt like that type of a problem. So like I was always reading books, you know, like this kind of became my hobby in terms of like, how do we make this work between the two of us? And so that was already something that was going on. So, you know, by the time she came out as bi, it just kind of became an extension of like troubleshooting the problem. Like, all right, well, okay, let's find what works for you. And if we find what works for you, then maybe we find something that works for us, you know?
Wow.
Because I think that was, the simple explanation of what was kind of going on in my head at the time.
Wow, that's incredible. And then, go ahead. Did you want to say something, Monique?
Oh, I was just going to say that David has always been very sex positive. And so he read She Comes First in his 30s, you know, where he was always trying for my benefit. Like every single thing that he ever did was always like trying to help me.
Wow. Man, do you have a sister by chance that's anything like you that you could introduce me to? Oh my God. Well, they'd be younger, so that's not going to work. But so what was your take on? So there was a misalignment of libidos. She comes out as bi, and then what? I mean, the two of you can jump in at any point. You know, like what was going? You know, were you on the same page as trying to come up with what would align your libidos?
Yeah, I don't. I mean, like I recall, like Monique said, that initially, you know, like there was this bit of a honeymoon period where it's like something got unlocked. So therefore, maybe some walls dropped that allowed us to kind of get along for a while. Mm. And then honestly, like between then and her coming out as gay, I feel like it just kind of settled back into a regular routine again, you know, where, it just kind of became a regular, it wasn't scheduled, but like on a cadence that we both became comfortable with when it came to our intimacy. So, yeah.
And I think the keyword there would definitely be routine.
Mm.
Yeah, for sure.
And then what changed, if anything? Well, what was your response when she came out as gay? And, you know, did you panic? Did you freak out? Or did you just go to troubleshooting mode number two?
I probably went to troubleshooting mode number two. I also went to some common tropes that in retrospect seem naive and a bit embarrassing, that, you know, the whole like, oh, well, we'll find you a girl and, you know, like we'll have some sort of, you know, thing that goes on, maybe just between you and her or whatever. And yeah, I'm going to skirt past that as quickly as possible because it's embarrassing to even, you know, say out loud that that's the sort of stuff that initially comes to mind, but it's pretty common, right?
It's very common. Yeah. It's really not something to be embarrassed about. That's actually one solution to not divorcing, you know?
Yeah.
And I know some women that come to my support group that is their solution, that there's a woman, she has an apartment outside of the marital home. Their kids are grown. They've been married for a gazillion years. He has no interest in having a relationship with another woman. And she is, contractually, they have agreed that she is okay to date, you know, and she does on occasion. So it may sound silly for your setup or your relationship, but it actually is very common. That's what's so cool about 2023, that it just blows my mind that there is no wrong way to do this. You know, if you and your spouse have love and respect for one another, anything is possible. Right. Any configuration of a relationship is on the table because it's the two of you that are designing it. And it does not matter what anyone else thinks, you know, none of anyone else's business.
And absolutely. And I would say, without skipping too far ahead, like 100% agree with everything that you just said. The embarrassing part is more the idea that like somehow like a threesome's going to happen or something, like that. You know, that and everything's just going to work itself out in that sort of a sense, rather than, you know, something that what you describe might be, you know, more healthy of an arrangement, you know, in whether that's an E&M or poly sense or whatever, like where it's well thought out and all that stuff. Like the initial thoughts are not well thought out.
And to your credit, that's not uncommon for many spouses to go there first. Like, you know, in some cases, some men are like, ooh, I get a threesome now, you know, and other people just, I mean, that's just the first. And again, it's an obvious well, place for our mind.
That's what we're shown to do, right? That's what is expected.
Yeah.
And I would say, though, that like at that time, though, like I can't say that my head at all went to that we're going to separate or divorce or anything like that. It was like it was still just, all right, it's a problem that we're going to work to solve. And I mean, honestly, like also like, you know, even just talking about those types of arrangements and stuff like that helped build a spark between us a little bit, which, you know, helped keep things going, you know, as we went further on.
And I'm just so freaking impressed. And I hope the people that are listening are as well, that here are two individuals that clearly love each other and have known each other since they were 16 freaking years old, and an immense amount of respect and love between these two. And they're just, they're plodding along, figuring this out, you know, both very bright individuals who clearly do their research, you know, and are reading, getting their hands on everything that they can read and understand about what their options are, which is really cool.
Yeah, we're definitely trying. I would say that it was weird because when I came out, like I said, we just sort of like, okay, well, that's how we are now. And I think that I put on more the mantle of I'm a lesbian, and so like what that meant more as a creative person, what does that mean visually? I'm like, I can get my hair cut, like I always wanted to get my hair cut, so I got my hair cut, and that was a huge step for me because it was so freeing to actually start being myself and finding integrity in myself. And then as you come out, like I you know, I guess the term baby gay for me, I'm like a zygote gay, where it's okay, I got my hair cut and I got some cool lesbian socks, and you know, but I'm still married my husband, and so we're just kind of going along. And what was interesting though is that I started in your group, Robin, in January. I came to a coming out like Facebook group. And it was then though that things started actually declining with David and I a lot, because actually it was prior to that. Right,
like
prior to that, because
you
it was
joining
Christmas.
The group led to that, right?
Yeah, because I it was
or I said that backwards.
No, yeah. We were We were watching the Christmas movie, one of the holiday ones with Kristen Stewart, and it's a lesbian Christmas
movie. Oh, yes. I saw that.
And it's, you know, a cute little rom-com, but it made me really sad because here's something that I wasn't going to experience. So while I had come out in 2019, here it is, December 2022, I'm just now getting the feelings of, oh, wait a minute. This means that I don't get a lot of things. And I start getting really angry and grieving a lot for lost time and just thinking things were just massively unfair, that even though I would not change anything with David, man, like in college, if I decided to hook up with a girl, like this could have just been massively different. Like if I had known, this would have been massively different. Yet, of course, with David, I would not change anything. So I have these two sides, I mean, that are now ripping apart because I have a very stable, wonderful marriage. But my lesbian bucket, so to speak, of like, you have, you know, all the different buckets of life of, you know, you have your spiritual bucket and, you know, work purpose bucket and love bucket, all this stuff. But my queer bucket was empty and dusty at that. And I didn't know what to do with that because I was grieving the loss of the community. We went to see, or we saw this, David Jeremiah, it was a documentary on a lesbian magazine. And yes. I forget the name of the magazine, but anyway, it was
Curve, the woman,
yes. And it was this seminal, you know, magazine, and when we're watching the documentary, they show the lesbian community and she's hanging out with these women, and I just got this longing, like, I don't have that. I just don't have that. And so then I joined your Facebook group because I'm like, I kind of want that. But then I just started seeing actual lesbians, real live ones, you know, and they were talking and I could talk with them. And then things started getting sad because a lot, as you know, a lot of stories in that group are not happy stories. And there's a reason it's a support group, because a lot of women have husbands that are nowhere near as gracious as David and who blame them, and then the women blame themselves, and then, you know, it's called the messy middle, you know. And so my version of the messy middle was quite light in comparison to other women's. But what I would say is that, you know, and what I've learned through all the different healing journeys that I've been on is that you can't compare your trauma to other people's trauma because it's still trauma to you. So my trauma was my trauma. And it was getting bad between where David and I would have these long, we always had great communication. So we would have these long talks, but I was looking at my journal entries and it's like, yeah, we talked again. And there was just this hopeless end where we didn't see a good solution because we have kids still living in the house. We have, you know, as all the other women do, like everyone in the group, have to deal with the marital, what do you do with the marriage?
Wow. Talk about a real life situation unfolding before our eyes. This has been an incredible interview so far. The candidness with which they both spoke, along with their willingness to share their story with us so that we get informed and inspired and enlightened, it's just amazing and so, so generous of them to be so damn vulnerable and open with us. And how cool is this historic experience for the Coming Out Late podcast, whereby we just experienced our very first ever husband and wife duo who came on to talk about their journey together during Monique's Coming Out Late journey. This has already been incredibly valuable, and I am so, so thankful for Monique and David's openness, their honesty, and their willingness to come on and talk about their experience and their courage to face this obstacle in their marriage head on. please be sure to tune in next week for part two of Coming Out Late in a Hetero Marriage, David and Monique's story. Until then, here are some announcements. If you get value from listening to my weekly podcast, I invite you to please show your appreciation by buying me a virtual coffee. All you have to do is go to the website buymeacoffee.com/Robin Douglas, RobinDouglass. I'd like to thank you all who have recently bought me a coffee or coffees, as well as all of you who have purchased coffees for me in the past. I really appreciate your support, and it does make a difference and means the world to Hugo and me. So thank you. Did you know I offer private one-on-one coaching? If you are struggling to make sense of and manage your coming out late journey, then I encourage you to send me an email and request information about my one-on-one coaching services. It really does make a big difference to have someone like myself who really understands what you're going through. Just email me at comingoutlater@gmail.com to request my coaching information sheet. Retreats. As far as the Coming Out Late retreats go, the retreat schedule for 2024 is shaping up nicely. The purpose of my Coming Out Late retreats is really to build community, make connections, and experience this newish out gay life with a small, trusted group of queer women, all while having a ton of fun in the process. We are kicking off our Coming Out Late retreats with a trip out to Portland, Oregon. Yay! We've been getting a huge amount of requests from people to come out to the Pacific Northwest. So here we come. And that's going to be in August. Then we travel back up to Up North Pride Festivities, which is taking place in Traverse City, Michigan, from September 25th to September 29th. And from there, we move on to Women's Week in Provincetown, Massachusetts, October 16th through the 20th. And if you want to be put on the list for any of these Coming Out Late retreat locations, email me at comingoutlater@gmail.com and you'll be put on the group email list. That's all I have for you for now. But in the meantime, be good. And if you can't be good, then be good at it. And remember, it's better late than never, because it's never too late. Carpe vita, everyone. Seize life. If you're looking for your people, your community, and a safe place to learn and get answers to your questions, then come join the conversation. Come join us in our private Facebook group, Coming Out Late, because we all know it's better late than never, and it's never too late. So-